Very welcome to this week's Roscommon GAA Memories with myself, Aidan Raftery, and of course Ray Lennon, former Roscommon goalkeeper. And this week we're going to be talking about the 1980 All-Ireland semi-final between Roscommon and Armagh, and it was some game of football, Ray.
One of the great games of football, Aidan, from a Roscommon point of view, was the 1980 All-Ireland semi-final, as you mentioned, against Armagh, and that happened on the 10th of August, 1980. It was the first All-Ireland semi-final that year. Roscommon, the Connacht champions, had reached five Connacht championship finals in a row and had won their fourth in a row, while Armagh had won in 1977. And this was their first time they won since 77 in 1980. In fact, when they won the 1977 Ulster Championship, they hadn't been in the final since 1953. So they won their first one since 1953 in 77. And they were in the All-Ireland final in 1953 and Kerry beat them. So they got to the semi-final in 77 Armagh and they met Roscommon. And they beat Roscommon after a replay to reach the All-Ireland final, where they got hammered by Dublin. Jimmy Keaveney got a record score in an All-Ireland final. But
Dublin legend, as we all know.
Absolutely.
And I believe the legendary Joe Kernan was playing that year as well. Of course, we all know he went on to manage Crossmaglen Rangers, Crossmaglen Rangers to a few All-Ireland club titles, and he had some good years with Armagh as well at management level.
He was. Joe Kernan was midfield for Armagh in 1980. He, along with Colin McKinstry, they came up against Seamus Hayden and Dermot Early. Joe Kernan, Crossmaglen Rangers, of course, famous manager of Crossmaglen for many years, and of course he led Armagh to the All-Ireland final victory in 2002 over Kerry. Joe Kernan played in the 1977 All-Ireland final, and he scored two goals that day. So he was a great footballer for Armagh for many, many years, Joe Kernan. And of course, the great discussion or talk about Joe Kernan relates Aidan to the halftime team talk he gave Armagh against Kerry in 2002 when they were losing, and he's reputed to have taken out his runners-up plaque from the 1977 final that he got when Armagh got hammered by Dublin. And he said to the lads, "Do you want one of these runners-up plaques?" And he is supposed to have just hammered it against the wall and it went into smithereens. But whatever the team talk was, it inspired Armagh. And they went out in the second half and they beat Kerry to win their first ever All-Ireland final. And funny, in 1953, when they got to that final against Kerry and Kerry beat them, Armagh missed a penalty in that final in 1953, and they missed a penalty in 2002. Oisín McConville missed it in the first half, but of course he went on to score a great goal from play in the second half that set Armagh up for a great victory. And we sort of forget that Joe Kernan managed Galway, Aidan. He managed Galway back in 2010. He managed them. They lost to Sligo in the championship, beat them, and Sligo beat Mayo, and Sligo then Roscommon beat Sligo by a point at the kind of final. Remember Donny Shine got that great performance. Yeah, so I think Joe Kernan's mother was from Galway, Ballinasloe, and so he said he would only manage one other county other than Armagh, that would be Galway. So he did that for one season, I think, in 2000. Yeah, but Galway were in transition that time. You know, Galway always have an abundance of talent, but that era, they were coming to the end of the Pádraig Joyce era sort of thing, and they were sort of, at an end of an era, really, like the 2000s. And, you know, the team that they had in the early 2000s was breaking up and nearly all gone at that stage. And then they were finding a new way with a new group of players. And it wasn't really until the last few years under Kevin Walsh that they got back to the top as such, like during the semi-final there a couple of years ago against Dublin. And then, of course, Mayo dominated for a long time. And Roscommon came back into it very well, which is brilliant to see. But getting back to the main story, in this classic game of football that happened at Croke Park in 1980 when Roscommon played Armagh. Of course, Armagh wear their orange jerseys. We wear blue and gold, so there was a colour clash. And we wore the Tipperary jerseys that day, the blue jersey with the gold hoop and the blue togs and blue socks. And do you know, Aidan, for me, it's one of the most beautiful kits I've ever seen any team wear.
He had that in 92 when he played against Armagh, funny enough, in the Ironically enough, in the All Ireland Minor Football Final that in 92.
In the semi final. Yeah,
we
wore the Tipperary jerseys, which was lovely, and it's a lovely kit. And they wore the all white, the same as Armagh and Roscommon did in 1980. And I was fortunate, I actually got to wear the Roscommon jersey in 1992 because the goalkeeper wore the yellow jersey, which was great, you know. So
yeah.
it was nice to check out Crow Park with the Roscommon jersey, you know, the yellow and blue one. It was lovely. And a dream come true. So,
That's a coincidence, isn't it, that on the two. In the two All-Ireland semi-finals, albeit I know the one you were in, like, it was the minor, but still there was two All-Ireland finals where the same kit was worn by both teams. The same kits were worn by the same teams.
That's right, and I think in 1977 they wore the same kit as well, except in 77 Roscommon wore the Tipperary jersey, but at that time we had white shorts with the blue and yellow socks, and the 77 kit that Roscommon had was just amazing. And I'd love to see Roscommon go back to the white shorts for a short period, Aidan, just for a bit of variety, you know, just to, because like we had white shorts up till 79, I think, and it's just nice, you know, it's a nice change just for a couple of years. But I'd like to see Roscommon, here I am, I've a lot of on the wish list, haven't I? I'd like to see us go back to the away strip of the Tipperary jersey. I know our away strip is now all blue, like the Clannagale jersey, which is nice, there's no question about it. But that yellow or gold hoop looked fantastic, you know. So, but Roscommon beat Armagh by 2 goals and 20 points to 3 goals and 11. Star of the show for Roscommon that day was, without question, Michael Finnern. He scored 1 goal and 8 points. He had an absolute dream match. And Tony McManus scored 1 goal and 2 points. John O'Connor scored 4. Dermot Early, 3. John O'Garrig, Danny Murray and Aidan Dooley all scored a point. But Roscommon were up against it for a long period in that game. And like Armagh were a formidable team. They scored 3-11. At half-time, it was 2-6 to 7 points in favour of Armagh. The first goal was scored by Martin Murphy for Armagh. A great shot that beat Gay Sheeran in the goals. And then the second goal Armagh got was a soft goal. It was a high ball lobbed in by Jimmy Smith, centre-half forward, and somehow it ended up in the back of the net. And it left a 2-6 to 7 at half-time. Roscommon struggling. But in the second half, Roscommon came back into it, and then Armagh got another soft goal from a free out on the sideline that just dropped into the net as well. With 12 minutes to go, Aidan, Roscommon had brought it back to 3-11 to 1-14. So Roscommon brought it back to 3-11 to 1-14, and then in the last 12 minutes, 3-10 to 1-14. In the last 12 minutes, Roscommon scored 1-6. They just routed Armagh. It was a credit to the Roscommon manager, Tom Heenan, and his backroom team, the fitness that Roscommon had, because they totally outplayed Armagh in the last 10 minutes. And
was that down to tactics? That was kind of down to tactics as well. And I suppose substitutions at the right time and different things. It's like we're always going on about, you know, how shrewd you have to be as a manager to make the right switches and the right calls at the right time. Would you say that was a major contribution to that to that comeback?
No doubt about it, because Martin McDermott came on for Seamus Hayden and he had a great game in the middle of the field. And Martin Dolphin came on for Eamon McManus and he sort of played okay as well. So, like, they completely outfought Armagh in the last 10 minutes, but their fitness levels of the Roscommon team was incredible. And the game is up on YouTube now, and you can just see the level of fitness that Roscommon have that in the last 10 minutes. They seem to leave the Armagh players for dead, which is credit to the management. But the last goal that Roscommon got, Aidan, was a brilliant goal. It was Gay Sheeran got it in the goals, and he kicked it out, and it came as far as Tony McManus. He drove it up the feed into the corner forward position, and Mickey Finnern got it. And the goalie came out, and Brian McAlinden, and Mickey Finnern just cut inside him. And the defender was trying to get to Mickey Finnern, but Mickey Finnern hand-passed it into the net. And in those days, you could hand-pass the ball into the net.
And remember, I've seen many a goal. And, of course, remember that for Meath versus Louth back in 2010?
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't a hand, but the meat player says it wasn't so much a handball into the net. It was he reckoned he was pushed over the line. But anyway, that's another story. The change of rules, I suppose, has cut that out. I know you can hand pass it over the bar, but the ball has to be in mid air to and you strike with your fist to score a goal.
Absolutely, you have to. It has to be in flight, and you can head it or punch it or whatever. But you said there the Meath player, Joe Sheridan. He said he was pushed over the line. Well, that would make it a pushover try, wouldn't it? Or goal, I mean, rather. You know,
yeah, but he reckons that, you know, if the goal wasn't allowed, it would have been a penalty.
Well, I don't know.
It was just a weird way it happened.
I don't know what planet he was on, because there was no way that was a penalty. It was one of the most shocking, I have to say, it's one of the most shocking decisions I've ever seen in sport. And how loud.
No matter how many times you look at it.
Yeah, it's a free out. It's free out all day long. You know, he bulldozed his way over. It was like the schoolyard, isn't it? Like, you know, years ago when you're playing the schoolyard and you're a goal down and you try to score by hook or by crook and fellas just bulldoze it in over the line. And like soccer, we used to play soccer behind the goals, behind the school, and like goals were scored any which way possible at the end of the game. But Joe Sheridan's, I wouldn't even give it the dignity of a goal, Aidan. It's more a rugby score. It's a travesty. It's how that can happen in modern day sport in the GAA. I don't know. I beg his belief. Lough deserved to win that Ireland or that Leinster championship. It was a total injustice. How Meath didn't offer to give a replay, I don't know. It's 10 years ago now, and as a Roscommon fan, if that happened to us, I can only imagine how we would feel now. And I have to say, for Lough, a minor county as things stand, they haven't won it since 1957.
It should have been on crime call. It was that bad. Like,
if you look at it like this, Galway, you take 1989 there, the Connacht final when we got the goal, the penalty, the minor final. Technically, Galway were awarded that game by the referee, but yeah. Galway had the fair sense of fair play. They weren't going to take it like that. They wanted to have a replay. Galway, I think, offered the replay. I'm open to be contradicted. Yeah, but I think Galway offered the replay there, which was the sporting thing to do. Now. The sporting thing to do in the Joe Sheridan situation was for somebody within the Meath ranks to say, this is not right. We cannot accept a Leinster championship with this spectacle hanging over us. Like, the cloud is still hanging over them. And to this day, ask any GAA fan about that game and they'll say, total injustice. Remember the night of the game, Pat Spillane was saying, has to be replayed. The Meath people were saying, it's not up to us, it's up to the GAA. I don't agree with that. It's up to...
Because even I was watching, it was on the Sunday game, you were probably watching it yourself, and you know, I think it was the chairman said, oh, well, we didn't offer the replay because we were afraid if we did that we'd be in breach of some law. Well, like, as a member of the county board, he should have known the laws inside out, and it would have been if you know the laws, or even the common decency would say, look, if we'd need to, there's nothing wrong with offering a replay. I mean, as you just said there, it's the sporting thing to do, and I don't think, you know, they wouldn't have been criticised for it, and I'm sure Croke Park wouldn't have said no because it would have been more money in their pockets. But anyway, that's
another thing, Aidan, that it raises as well is that I think the referee that day sort of told his umpire to put up the green flag, and the umpire was reluctant to do it. You know, the umpire, I know it's easy from this remove, the umpire should have just thrown the flag down or thrown it away and not put up the flag. If he believed it wasn't a goal, he should not have put up the flag. And this is another issue that we have in the GAA, is the training of umpires. You know, I know we haven't had much controversy in recent years with umpires, and maybe they're getting the training now that maybe they hadn't got in the past. But certainly that Joe Sheridan thing, it really gets me going, because it's when you see an injustice, no matter where it raises its ugly head. Be it
that would have been a huge boost for football in Louth as well. And of course, as we know, we've read it in recent weeks. Of course, our very own Paul Noon is playing for a club up in Louth as well. And I think they were saying he's the only player in Louth with a provincial medal. So that's some claim to fame, isn't it?
Well, do you know what it reminds me of, Aidan? That Louth situation and the Thierry Henry thing situation. You know, like total injustices. You see those happening, and it's so sad that at the highest level of sport you can see that can happen. You know,
these things tend to happen in big, big, huge, serious games. Like, absolutely. You know, they don't happen like in a league game or in an FBD game or O'Byrne Cup or anything. It's always on big days when it can, which can be when, and it turned out to be on that day, well, the deciding factor, the thing that swung Meade's way.
Well, I think if the GAA say that they go on the referee's report, and fair enough, but if I think the GAA membership, I don't know, I'm not big on the rules, to be honest with you, on the constitution of the organisation, but I love the GAA, there's no question, I've been follower and player for many, many years, you know, all my life, that there should be some sort of a stipulation or rule within the rule book that if there's a clear injustice that hasn't been picked up by the referee during the game, that has a what I would call a material impact on the outcome or the result, be it something like the Joe Sheridan situation, there and replays it, or maybe a point is waved wide that should have been a point. Like we saw it in 95 with Leash and Carlow. Leash and Carlow played in the first round of the championship down in Port Leash in Carlow, and Leash got a point which was given but was clearly wide. Now, here's, Leash won that game by a point, and after the game they saw that the ball was wide. The GA, the Sunday game showed it was wide. And what did Leash do? Leash gave Carlow a replay, and Leash won the replay. Like, that is the way to conduct sport.
So why would Meade not do that? Like, were they afraid of the... Because, in fairness, on that day, Loud were the better team as well.
Loud played very well. They should have won that game without that score, and they had a couple of chances. But, like this isn't a criticism of Meade. This could have happened. This could have been Roscommon. It could have been Galway. It could have been any county. But, like, if you look at it, Meade have never really figured since that. You know, since that, I would call it... Like, Meade is a proud tradition, proud county. They've won so much. They've been there all along. And they could have, like, for all their tradition and their high standards, that was a situation where they could have said, hang on, do we really need this thing to be festering for years and years and years? That situation would have been dealt with if they come out after the game and says, look, we can't accept the trophy. We have to have a replay. The fact is that Meade probably would have beaten them by about 10 points in the replay, but we wouldn't be having discussion now, Aidan. We wouldn't be even looking at this issue now. But I think it's such an important issue. It really has a black mark against whoever is responsible for not allowing the replay.
They were saying there, like, I mean, Colm O'Rourke made the point on the Sunday game as well, is he said if that happened to Loud, where Loud had put over the line like that, would there be half as much about? But I think it would be, because even though everyone would have been rooting for Loud, obviously bar the Meade fans, but still, regardless of whether it happened to Meade or Loud on that day, It would have still been a wrong decision, regardless of what the team happened. But I suppose, really, going back on the hand pad, you were saying there, back in 1980, you were allowed to score. With the fist ball. So I wonder when was that rule changed, or was there a reason behind it being changed that you couldn't score and couldn't any longer score from a fisted hand pass?
I think the rule changed around 1981 or 82 in, and if you saw it in 1980, you could nearly flick the ball with an open hand off the palm of your hand. It was nearly a throw. You know, they were sort of flicking the ball with open hands to each other, and also scored like that. It was about 81, 82, it changed. There was no real goals after 81, I think, with the open hand. But, like, if you look at Roscommon scored two goals in that semi-final with the open hand. Mickey Finneran got the one at the very end. But the goal that Roscommon got before that was Tony McManus's goal. And the piece of skill that Michael Finneran showed in order to set up Tony McManus, it was one of the greatest pieces of skill you'd ever see, and I recommend anybody to watch it on YouTube. Mickey Finneran was in front of his man, the fullback, and he looked like he was going to go and kick a point with his right foot. But what he did was he put the ball on his toe and took it back up, and he sold the fullback a dummy, got by him, flicked it into Tony Mack, and Tony Mack flicked it past Brian McAlinden for a goal that really got Roscommon back into the game. But it was a great piece of skill by Mickey Finneran, and like, we cannot underscore how great a player Michael Finneran was. He was an absolute genius. And I think
we were Roscommon in most years, you know, around that era. I suppose a combination of, as goalkeepers, we admire other goalkeepers, Ray, but you have to admire the one great thing that Gay Sheeran had was his great kickouts. And you were mentioning to me the other day about, you know, boots that you had, like, back in those days, like, goalkeepers were allowed to have the steel toe caps. But he always had a huge kick out, didn't he?
Yeah, sure. He was a very accurate kicker. He had a great, he had a good kick out, and he had a very accurate kick. And also he could elevate the ball pretty well to make it hang. For if you had a good midfielder like we had with John Newton and Seamus Killoran, he could
imagine if the mark was out back in those days.
Yeah, he could hang the ball. He used to hang the ball very well into the air. Now, that game wasn't Gay's greatest ever game for Roscommon. He was, you know, he got caught out twice, which any goalkeeper can do. But he had a very good game in the All-Ireland final against Kerry. And he then, of course, went on to be the great goalkeeper he was over the years for Roscommon. But it was a great game of football in 1980. Like, Brian McAlinden was in goals for Armagh. He was a great goalkeeper too. He played for them for many years. And he was beaten twice by of course, Roscommon men that day. Dermot Airey kicked some great scores. The last score of that game was scored by Tony McManus. That was a brilliant point as well. Tony Mac got the ball on the run and he kicked it over the bar. Like, you know, to put the, you know, the icing on the cake, or as Micheál O'Hare used to say, the insurance point. So, but if you look at what the players said after the game, like Harry Keegan said, after reaching the first All-Ireland final since 1962, Harry Keegan said, "A few of us have waited a long time for this, and now we've done it. We've reached our first final. It was a really competitive game. There were plenty of niggly fouling, but it was a wholehearted and never dirty. All we needed."
I suppose really that group of players deserved to get to an All-Ireland final.
That team deserved to win an All-Ireland.
Exactly, you know, not alone just to get to the final, but they deserved to win one. But yeah. I think really that year, when you look at that 15, and of course the subs that came on that day as well, as a whole, you know, they didn't have to look for each other. They just knew where each other was instinctively. It was like, you know, they could find each other with their eyes closed, couldn't they?
Well, they played together for so long, and if you see any team that plays for so long
they're
together,
like Dublin nowadays, I suppose.
It's
really,
you build up that the understanding and the intuition. It's like, you know, a good strike partnership in soccer. They know each other's play. They know what they're going to do. It's like if you're a midfielder and if you're a corner forward, you know where the midfielder is going to kick the ball, how he's going to deliver it. It's just the understanding that you build up. It's like in any relationship, be it at work or in sport or any, you know, even in a band or a musical, you know, ensemble. You know what the other person's thinking. You know what they're going to do. You know how they're going to react to a situation. So these guys like Tony Mack, Mickey Finner, John O'Connor, John O'Gara, they're some of the greats of Roscommon football. You know, Dermot Airlie, Eamon McManus, you know, Tom Heenan, Jerry Fitzmaurice. These guys knew each other inside out. They played together for 5 or 6 years. And a lot of those guys had come up together on the minor team and on the under-21 team that won the All-Ireland in 78. You know, so as we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. So, like,
that's it.
So,
and I suppose, really, a few weeks ago, or maybe I think it was even last week, we were saying about that relationship between the goalkeeper and the full back as well. That's an essential relationship as well.
So important.
The relationship of all 15 players, the starting 15, is essential. But that really is the crux, because that's the starting point for a lot of attacks as well. And, you know, if, you know, the full back and the goalkeeper have that understanding. And we were saying about that's the very little or very rarely is that, like, the fullback changed and the goalkeeper, like, they're the least changed in any position on a starting 15, aren't they, really?
If you see a team struggling with the fullback position and the goalkeeper's position, you have to ask yourself serious questions. It's trouble straight away. We saw it with Mayo over the years, you know, chopping and changing the goalkeeper, fullback as well. Even with ourselves in Roscommon, we've been chopping and changing fullbacks over the years too, which is never a great sign. You really need a unit to be in place for a long time. And if you look at Roscommon's, I would say, you know, their fullback line and the goalkeeper unit of Gay Sheeran, Harry Keegan, Pat Lindsay and Jerry Connellan, like, they were still the back four, if you like, for Roscommon in 1985 in the Connacht final when they played Mayo. So those guys were, you know, they were steady, it was reliable. For so long, you know, Gay Sheeran.
Even looking at the spine of that team, like, I mean, you know, the goalkeeper, fullback, centre half back, the midfield, the centre half forward, and full forward. You know, that's the spine of the team is essential as well.
Absolutely, and let's face it, most teams, the strength of your team is down the middle. You need power, you need presence, you need physicality, you need skill, pace, all of that down the centre. And if you've got a strong centre, and then you've got speed on your wings, and you can play the flanks, like, you've got a great recipe for a good team. Like Roscommon had some very good wing players in the 70s and 80s. There were John O'Connor, you know, he was a good, great number 10. Like Tommy Graham was a great wing forward for Roscommon in the later part of the early 90s, you know. And like, when you've got pace down the wing, and it means you can attack on the flanks, it's a great avenue, because most teams are strong down the middle. And if you can if you can attack on the flanks, see, even in a military sense, you know, outflank, you know, you often talk about armies being outflanked in history. And once teams armies outflank an opponent, to get an opportunity to beat them, like Wellington at the Battle of Waterloo outflanked Napoleon, so he was able to get in around them, as opposed to going through them and get in behind them. And you see in football and soccer, if you've got good wingers, they can get outside and beat the fullbacks and get in around them, you're in with a chance of opening up the defence. And I still think if you've got good half forwards, they can attack down those flanks and take the ball out of the centre and open up the wings and make good avenues up the wing and get in behind opponents. That's a great way. And Roscommon always had good players like that, Vincent Glennon, you know, John O'Connor, Tommy Graham, you know, great players that they could play down the wings and outflank opponents. So Roscommon, that day, and they qualified to win, to go forward to the All-Ireland final. Just say what John O'Gara said, it looked bad for a while during the game. It was really hard game out there, but it's a great feeling to win the semi-final for a change. We weren't too worried at half-time, and it really all changed when our midfield got going in the second half. So, like, if you think about it, Roscommon had lost three All-Ireland semi-finals in a row, and the most agonising defeat was the year before against Dublin, when they lost by a point in the All-Ireland semi-final. Mickey Finneran came on a sub late in that game, and he changed the game when he came on. He scored a great goal as well. So it was a great win for Roscommon. Tommy Heenan was the manager in 1980, and he said, "I am relieved and delighted. It was heart and courage which won for us, for we had given them the game 2 or 3 years ago. I wasn't too worried, for I have faith in the players, and I knew they would lift their game in the second half. It was then that they showed great character. We expected a hard game, and we needed one, but it was great to see them pulling away at the end." So again, this was Tommy Heenan, who had been manager of Roscommon for 4 years, won the league final the year before, had won 4 Connacht championships in a row. He had led Roscommon into an All-Ireland final, and this was the chance to take on the great Kerry team.
That's it. And it was obvious, like you were saying about that, when they met in the previous All-Ireland semi-final before 1980, you know, obviously Roscommon learned an awful lot from the previous All-Ireland semi-final. And I suppose, if looking at the two semi-finals, was there much in the difference in the starting 15s?
Well, there would have been a few differences, Aidan, because in 1977, Roscommon had Mickey Frayne playing, Mickey Minton, Patsy Cox. I think John Kelly was still there at that stage. So, like, there was, you know, you wouldn't have had the Seamus Haydens or the Jerry Fitzmaurice, Jerry Kinnellans.
They came along after
the 78-121 team, the Michael Finnerns. They weren't there at that stage. So John McDermott was in goals in 77, and Gay Sheridan had come in 80. So you're looking for 6 or 7 changes, you know. So it is
that's a big difference.
Yeah, it's a different team.
In 2 years, So, well, I suppose, really, if you compare, like, you know, the game back then to the game now, I mean, there's an awful lot more hand passing in the game as opposed to, across the board in all around Ireland, like in even in league games and championship games, there's a lot of hand passing. We were touching on that this off air, where you know sometimes a team will be in a very scoreable position and the player would have the ball, he'd be in a very scoreable position, and then they say, "Oh, all right, then the hand pass it once or twice more, and next thing the chance is gone." Whereas I think it was more, you know, there was more kicking based football back in those days, which was I suppose prettier to watch. Although, look, the way the game has gone these days, it's a lot quicker, and you kind of it's a way of holding on to possession in many ways, and maybe in some situations you mightn't have a choice but to pass, hand pass, you know, in certain situations. But the, from my observation from back then, football back then and now, you know, there seem to have been a lot more hand passing nowadays. Is that a fair point? Or?
I agree totally, Eden. Like, the way Gaelic football has evolved, if you can call it an evolution, or is it a retrograde step? Players have got so fit. Sports science has come into it. Everybody's so...
Blanket defence and sweeper and all these kind of things have come in as well.
The fitness levels are now off the charts. So players can run a lot more. They can... carry the ball a lot more. But I think, as well as that, a lot of teams are encouraged to carry the ball and play a game where let's hold possession and don't lose the ball. And that has led to teams holding on to the ball. And it's quite often you see in Gaelic football now where a team could nearly hand pass the ball the whole way up the field and score a point with the kick at the last phase of the attack. It's a very boring way of playing football, in my opinion. If Gaelic football has lost its traditional soul in terms of putting the boot to ball. Like, the last score that Roscommon scored in 1980 was Gay Sheeran out to Tony McManus. The goal that Roscommon scored, Gay Sheeran out to, I think it was Tony McManus or Dermot Early, up to Mickey Finneran, three kicks up the field, a goal. The last point Roscommon got, Tony Mack from way out, absolutely brilliant. Nowadays, it's like Let's face it, it's keep possession, it's run the ball up the field. But I still think that if coaches have confidence in their players, if you have good enough players, let the ball do the work. Because ultimately teams can run out of steam and the foot will be put to ball. I think, Aidan, something needs to be done about the hand pass in Gaelic football. It goes against the traditional game. It's too much of it, in my opinion. It's not attractive to the eye. Especially some of the games you see in the Ulster Championship with maybe 15 players behind the ball and fellas just hand-passing the balls over back the field. It's absolutely desperate.
Yeah, so we say, like, if you were to compare now Roscommon style of football back then and now, what would your thoughts be on that? Like, because from what I can see, that Roscommon always played a good brand of football. They always played a very good style of football.
I still think Roscommon play decent football. As teams go, Roscommon are one of the most attractive teams. They try to let the ball do the work. Roscommon in the late 70s, early 80s, from what I can see and what I've seen of them, they let the ball do the work. Dermot Early, like, look at the goal Roscommon got in 1980 in the All-Ireland final in the first minute. Shawnee Walsh took a free. Dermot Early blocked it down. Dermot didn't even look to see the hand pass. He just drove it into the full forward position to Tony Mack. Tony Mack took on John O'Keefe, beat him up a stick. Went around him, hand passed the ball into Jigger for a goal. So, like, Roscommon were looking to play that early kick pass all the time. Same in 1980. And, like, if you look at Roscommon, only hand passed the ball at the very last moment, maybe to set up a goal or a point. That's what these guys did. But the football was all. Roscommon always played football. And the day I think that Roscommon evolved, if you like, if you can call it evolve, into this hand passing game of from cornerback up to full forward, like, that's. In my opinion, that's not the way football should be played. That's not the way. I think Kerry and Dublin, if you look at Kerry and Dublin, they still do a lot of kicking. They kick the ball a lot. And it's last year's All-Ireland finals were very good, lovely to watch, because even though Dublin are a great side, they carry the ball a lot, but they still kick the ball. And but they have belief, Aidan, in their players that they can win it. And I think
it's the accuracy in the passes as well. That must be nearly like, you know, the players do it in their sleep at training and in O'Byrne Cups and in league matches and championship games. Like, they could nearly do it with their eyes closed. The passing, the kick passing is so crisp and very accurate, you know. It's a sight to behold. But, you know, obviously, first and foremost, we're Roscommon fans. And, you know, to be fair, as we just said there, Roscommon have always played a good brand of football and they've always been kind of played an attractive an attractive style of football, which is great, you know. But, you know, you have to. But just looking at the way, like you just said there, like with Dublin, they could find players with their eyes closed, you know. And that's, as you said, down to familiarity as well.
It is, and I think as well, if a manager sets up his team to go and keep possession and say hand pass the ball up the field to try and get a score, ultimately you're going to run into a roadblock somewhere along the line. And it gives teams opportunities to funnel back and defend against that. Whereas the kick pass, which is hit quickly, can bypass and overfly the defence and in early into the full forward line causes trouble. You know what I mean? If you're playing with the wind, if you look at it, Roscommon beat Galway College final 3 years ago. Like, you remember the ball that Jeremy Murtha kicked into Cian Connolly for the first goal? Like, he was way out on the sideline. And like, in fairness to Cian, and Kevin McStay encouraged him to do that, to kick the ball. He kicked a great pass in. Like, he kicked the ball 50 yards in, diagonal ball in, and Cian Connolly took a past his marker and buried it. Like, that was brilliant kick passing. And that's the sort of football you love to see playing. Another manager would have said to Jeremy Murtha, hold it up. Don't take a chance in giving that away because Cian Connolly is a man near him. Hold it up and try and get a runner off your shoulder and we'll try and walk it in. Like, that's, for me, a manager with little faith or belief in his players. And I think those teams, generally, they don't get too far. You know, the teams that hold on to the ball. Most kick-passing teams win All-Irelands. You know, let's face it. Right. Teams that play the ball long, kick it, not afraid to use the boot, they generally win All-Irelands. And I think that I'd like to see something brought into GAA to diminish the level of hand passes in the game, because I do think it goes against the grain. It goes against what the sport was set up for in the outset, you know?
That's it, because, I mean, really, if you look across the board, you know, that was the good thing about Kevin McStay and, of course, now Anthony Cunningham is, he always said that both managers had faith in the players and they allowed the players to express themselves and play in a way that was comfortable for, like, if the player had the ability to do A, B, and C, let them do A, B, and C, because that's what they're got. That's when they're at their best. But I think with some teams, when you look at them, they're kind of, the managers are, I nearly have the player, some of the players in certain positions in straitjackets. You can only do this and do that, but you can't do other things. You know what I mean? They're kind of, I suppose the players essentially are in a straitjacket in some senses.
I think in any sport, Aidan, the key to the game is pretty simple. Get the ball as quickly as you possibly can into the danger area. The danger area is anywhere in a 30 yards of goal, in front of the goals, anywhere in that area. And you have to have belief that you're going to have a man up top in the corner forward position or the full forward position that can win primary possession. You often hear Gerlach Nan talking in the Sunday game about players and teams that can win ball up top. Forwards winning possession in front of their men is key, in my opinion, to successful teams. If you've got forwards that a ball can be played up to them, a 50-50 or 60-40 ball, and they can win the ball, like, if you've got your forwards winning possession, that's the key, in my opinion, to setting up scores. And the last thing you want is winning the ball in the backs, the midfield, and driving it in, and it's being returned all the time by the defence. But if we can win possession up top, from early ball played up to the full forward, to the corner forward, whatever, and play it, lay it to a man off their shoulder running through, you know, that's the key to winning matches. And this idea of a slow build-up, a hand-passing game, it's going to stop. The better teams are able to set up defences to stop that. Now, teams will get away with that against lesser teams. When you're up against the Dublins, the Kerrys, the top teams in football, they have defensive systems to stop those running teams, I would call them, the basketball teams, the throwing the ball around teams. However, if you've got a good kick-passing game and you win prime possession in the midfield and you can deliver the ball quick and early into forwards, they can win their own ball and either take on their man and take a score, or if they can't take on the man, throw the ball out to a man coming through the centre or running off the shoulder to kick a score. That's the key to good football. It's simple. Get the ball into danger area as fast as you can, and then if you've got a man that can win it, and that's the one thing we have now with Cox. Cox is able to win the ball. Do you know, and I think as well, like, forwards have to be, you know, as a forward, I often play, I know I'm a defender or a goalkeeper, but I've played in training sessions over the years where we have backs and forwards, and when the backs are the backs, they used to win majority of the balls was kicked in. And then when the forwards became the backs, you know, they switched it around. Do you ever find that, Aidan, in training, where the
backs...
Yeah. When the forwards,
the good old games of backs and forwards,
When the forwards became the backs, and the backs became the forwards, the backs still won most of the ball coming in. But I think it's forwards have to... The great forwards are the ones... See the Colm O'Rourke, these guys that play down the years... The strong, the courageous forwards.
The warriors.
Do you know what? They're not afraid to go out and win the ball. Now,
I think that's the reflection of that would be, you know, Roscommon in 1980 in those two, well, more so against Armagh and Kerry in the, you know, in the All-Ireland semi-final and final. And I suppose in the modern era, the best example I could think of was the 2001 Connacht final, you know, that great goal Roscommon scored in the dying minutes of the game in the Hyde, you know, so that'll be that there are two or three games there where that's a perfect example of getting the ball in at as fast as possible or getting, you know.
There's two men, Gerry Lohan and Frankie Dolan. They were not afraid to go and win their own ball. They didn't, like, the point I was getting at was that certain managers now are getting their teams to carry the ball upfield, to hand the ball to the forward on a plate without him working for it, and to give him a shooting opportunity. And I think that's counterproductive in football. Now, if you look at it, I know I'm using an example from way back. When Offaly needed a goal in 1982, they didn't work the ball up the field. They launched it in high, and Seamus Darby went up and caught a ball and scored a goal. You know what I mean? That's the sort of courage, bravery, skill of a forward that we demand and we expect of. But forwards, I think, this is my opinion, that certain managers out there now are not demanding of their forwards to win their own ball. What they're demanding of their defenders and their midfielders to carry the ball up the field and hand it to a forward so the forward can get an opportunity. And I think the teams that are successful have forwards inside, like the James O'Donoghue's, the Paul Geaneys, David Clifford's, these guys who can beat Dean Rocks, Paul Mannion's, you know, that can win their own possession. They can fight for, create and win their own possession. Conor Cox is the same. So ask me the great forwards, the Tony McManus won his own ball. Frankie Dolan won his own ball. Colm O'Rourke, he would go through a wall to win his own ball for me.
Trevor Giles as well.
Look at the great forwards that played football. Stephen O'Neill. They win their own possession. They can go up Kieran Donnie. They can go up and catch it. Teams now,
Ocean McConville,
teams now, in my opinion, this is my opinion, are working the ball up the field to hand it to a guy to kick a point that might get into space without him working for it. So then, in my opinion, you're curtailing the limit, you're limiting the ability of your team because you're not demanding of your forwards to go on. This is my personal opinion, to win primary possession. And that's what the handball teams get caught out ultimately. It's all right if you can play lesser opposition, bring the ball to the field, hand it to your key marksman who'll kick it over for you. When you come up against the strong teams, the strong defensive systems and units where you have to let the ball go, the boys aren't used to working for it. You need to, if you've got your six forwards that can win the ball and be trained and asked of and demanded of them to win possession and ask them at the end of the game, how many balls did you win today? Off your man. How many balls that come in your area did you win? And it's always a key sign of a forward how he's playing in the first two or three balls Aidan has kicked in. If he's if he's a couple of yards behind his man for the three of them, it's as well to bring him off because he's not up to it. He's not interested. And you can see that happening in games where forwards are not just at it. Now there's other games where the forwards are roasting their marker. So it's all on the day, you know what I mean? But a lot of forward play is absolute courage and bravery and guts.
For that as well, we would have seen it by Michael Donlan in 1998. Right to a lot in every single game, he won the ball, some of the points he scored. Sean O'Gupuer as well, he wasn't afraid to, you know, he was in the half-back line. He scored nearly as many points as some of the forwards. You know, the Galway, that, you know, they're just some of the some of the players now that would stand out in certain games, you know, on the big day when it's needed.
The great Johnny Giles always says the great players do their stuff. He called it do their stuff when they're wanted most. When you see when the chips are down, that's when character is shown. And Roscommon showed the character in 1980 when the chips are down. But he talked about the 1998 Galway team. Like, in the second half of extra time in Roscommon that day, like Ja Follin, you know, he came into his own. That's Ja Follin beat us in Hyde Park that day. He kicked two.
I think Roscommon were the only team that actually gave Galway a game that year.
Well, they were. We deserved to win the first match. There's no question about that, and we could have won the replay. But like if Ja Follin wasn't playing for Galway, and I know that's ifs, and football isn't about ifs, buts, and maybes. It's about what happens on the day. If Ja Follin wasn't playing, Roscommon, in my opinion, would have won that game. Ja Follin was an unbelievable footballer, and I don't think it's in any way unfair to say that he was an incredible. Like, but to win an All Ireland, you have to have great players doing great things, and Ja Follin did that against us in the replay. In extra time, he brought it to a different level. When Galway needed somebody, he showed the way. He kicked some unreal, crazy scores. We had as well. Tommy Graham did it for Roscommon, but Ja Follin in the extra time just went head and shoulders above everybody.
And even in the All Ireland final against a very quality Kildare team. Do you remember that point from the sideline?
Absolutely, he did it against Derry as well.
Wow. Derry, exactly.
We're not, don't get me wrong, like, we deserve to win that kind of final in the first game, and we could have won the second game, there's no question. As I always think, we had a chance of a goal that Martin McNamara saved. It was unlucky, a punch, and McNamara saved, we could have scored it. But in extra time, Galway just, particularly Ja Follin, just went to that level. But you talked about that 98 Galway team, and my point was winning primary possession. Derek Savage, Pádraig Joyce, Niall Finnegan up front in the full forward line. They all could win the ball. They could all score. Half forward line, Paul Clancy could win possession and could score. Ja Follin and Michael Donlan. They all could win. And you can't have a forward line where you know you've only got two or three guys that can score and you've only got two or three guys that can win possession. And let's face it, a lot of county teams out there struggle because they have not got guys that can win their own ball and they have not got guys that can score. And I often listen to Gerlach Nan on the hurling when he talks about the great hurling teams. First thing he looks for in a forward line, who can win their own ball? And secondly, who can score? And it's no different in football and no different in club football or county football. If you can win enough ball at midfield, if you can break even at midfield and get enough ball into your own forward line, it's up to your forwards after that to do the damage. If you can't, let's face it, if we haven't got a good midfield, it's a very difficult situation to get a platform, to get enough possession.
70 minutes.
Midfield is the engineering, isn't it? Like, same as soccer. Yeah. If you haven't got a midfield in soccer, if you haven't got a midfield in Gaelic, you can forget about it. Like,
morale can go down very quick as well in the team. If you're trying and not succeeding, it'll make for a long 70 minutes, but also, like, it's straining on morale because you're kind of thinking, geez, will things go right at all for us today? You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. But of course, like, with the right players and the belief in the team, then that wouldn't be an issue. But sometimes even the best, it can happen even the best teams though sometimes.
The only time I ever saw Roscommon winning a game against the grain, if you like, where we're beating the midfield was in 1986 in Castlebar. One of the times, we probably did it more times as well, but in 1986 in Castlebar, Roscommon shocked Mayo. It was a brilliant game of football. It was on the 15th of June 1986. Tony McManus scored a goal for Roscommon after 30 seconds. But Roscommon that day were up against a Willie Joe Padden at midfield for Mayo that was absolutely out of this world. And I can still remember catching everything off the Mayo kickout. But credit must go to Gay Sheeran. He gave an exhibition of short kickouts that day that stands in my memory for a long time. He kicked the ball out to the half-back line to Danny Murray, and they just bypassed midfield. You know, Padden couldn't get a kick out off the Roscommon kickout because the ball wasn't coming out. We were working the ball out short, but it was a great display by Gay Sheeran and by Danny Murray. They bypassed the midfield, and Eamon Senior and Nick Tony scored points at the very end to win again by 2 points. But a brilliant game of football. It was during the Mexico World Cup in 86. It was a really hot day in Castlebar, but it was a great display by Roscommon, bypassing the midfield. But again, what we're just talking about there was the great Roscommon team in 1988, and they went on to unfortunately lose the All-Ireland final to Kerry, but that team were one of the greatest teams ever Roscommon had. And we just say with Michael Finneran, because Michael Finneran, Aidan, scored one goal and 8 points that day. He made a comment after the game. He says we got a bit of a talking to at half time, you know, and that made all the difference. Tommy Heenan spoke to them at half time with Dermot Early. So Michael Finneran says, we got a bit of a talking to at half time, but I wasn't worried even at that stage. It took us a long time to settle down, but I knew we'd come back. Early's points in the second half were vital. So they're talking about Dermot Early kicking two or three great points. It was great. It's a great feeling to have won an All-Ireland semi-final at last. And in fairness to the Armagh people, just one nice comment I saw, Aidan, that I think would be nice to mention. The Armagh chairman, John O'Reilly, came into the dressing room after the game and he said to Roscommon, you were on your knees at half time and we thought you had gone. However, you came back and won, and we want to thank you for the great competition you've given us in the past few years. And we would love to think that we were beaten by the All-Ireland champions. So that was him referring to the game in 77 as well, and hoping that Roscommon would win the All-Ireland. So, and funny enough, Aidan, a little bit of trivia. Gerry O'Neill was the Armagh manager that day, and he managed them in 77 as well. And he was a brother of Martin O'Neill, the former Ireland manager. So he was the manager. So he was the manager of Armagh in 1980. He was from Kilray, up there in County Derry, but he was the manager. Give you the Roscommon scorers and teams, Aidan, just before we finish on this game. Roscommon scored one goal and 8 points. Michael Finneran of Western Gaels, the great Mickey Finneran, scored one goal and 8 points. Tony McManus, the great Tony Mac, scored 1-2. John O'Connor, 4 points. Dermot Early, 3 points. John O'Gara, Denny Murray, and Aidan Dooley, a point apiece. Joe Kernan scored 2 points for Armagh. The Roscommon team was Gay Sheeran, Harry Keegan, Pat Lindsay, Jerry Kennellan, Jerry Fitzmaurice, Tom Donlan, Danny Murray, Dermot Early, Seamus Hayden, John O'Connor, John O'Gara, Aidan Dooley, Michael Finneran, Tony McManus, and Eamon McManus Sr. So the same team started the final as well against Kerry. And unfortunately, that was in the 1-9 to 1-6 to Kerry. Joe Kernan said after the game, all the hard work you put in, and then this. The moment that really killed me out there was when we missed out on that goal chance when Jimmy Smith's through pass just got away from Sean Devlin near the end. So he rues that chance. Brian McAlinden, the goalie, said, Michael Finneran's goal wrapped it up. I had to leave the post and challenge. I knew he was going to hand pass it and I just got my fingernails to it, but it was not good enough. Gerry O'Neill, the manager, said, we lost the game the minute Colin McKinstry retired. He was the midfielder, Colin McKinstry. Our midfield was never the same afterwards. I even thought that when we had that goal off the sideline free, it was a little bit against the run of play. So he's talking about that soft goal Armagh got in the second half. So I'll just finish by just talking about the junior final in the year 2000 for a minute.
Well, it was an achievement by a very good, you know, and some of them, some of those players went on to play senior for Roscommon and played, you know, Paul Noon was on it that day, Shane Curran played, and, you know, that was a very special group of junior players that year, you know, and, you know, they obviously earned their place, you know, playing very well for their club and all that, but there was a serious squad there looking at it.
Yeah, Aidan, Roscommon won by 14 points to 11. It took place down in Nina on the 19th of August. It was Saturday evening in the year 2000. And Gay Sheeran was the manager. And Roscommon, you know, won 14-11, as I said. Great game by Kevin Keane and Dominic Galluli in the middle of the field. They're up against Michael Quirk, who went on to play for Kerry at senior 11. So it was touch and go all along, and then Roscommon got the points at the end from Carol Mannion, got two great points, and Rory O'Donoghue from Boyle. They got the points that sealed it for Roscommon. But the Roscommon team was in Shane Curran, Ian Daly from Mike Glavy, selector now with Anthony Cunningham, Ger Mockler from St. Croix, Noel Galvin from St. Aidan's, and Noel would be a brother-in-law of Fergal O'Donnell's, Basil Mannion from St. Bridges, right half-back. He played for Roscommon after. Paul Noon, centre half-back, and Andrew McPadden, left half-back. He was from St. Rowland's. Midfield was Kevin Kane and Dominic Galluli. Now, Kevin Kane, his father was from Roscommon, but he played for Galway originally, Kevin Kane. I think he was on the minor team in 93 or 94. So he was midfield along with Dominic Galluli. And then Gary Cox, right half-forward, of course, great player for Roscommon. Biddy O'Brien from St. Bridget's. And then Kieran Lynch from Shannon Gales was left half-forward. Foot-forward line was Jason Neary from Ballinamene, Carl Mannion from St. Bridget's full forward, and Rory O'Donoghue from Boyle was left full forward. The sub was James Heenahan from Michael Glavies for Kieran Lynch. And Rory O'Donoghue was a brother, Niall O'Donoghue, who played for Scotland for a few years. Niall played minor with me. He also played for Dublin. Niall did. He was a very, very good player. Rory O'Donoghue scored 5 points that day. He scored 3 from frees. Kevin Kane, Gary Cox and Carol Mannion all scored 2 points. Andrew McPadden, Dominic Alooly and Benny O'Brien scored a point apiece. So that was really Carol Mannion's first real foray into the Roscommon ranks in, you know, and it was the start of a great career for Carol right through that decade and into the last decade as well. So he went on to become one of the great players and arguably one of the, you know, in the last 25 years, Carol Mannion, for what his service to Roscommon and his play, is one of the most consistent players Roscommon had over the last 25 years.
I suppose really for Roscommon, really for the senior team, he'd been more notable as a midfielder more so than, you know, that day, you know, in the full forward line. That's where he played his best football for the county, was at full, was at midfield. I wonder, did he ever play, I can't remember, did he ever play the forwards for Scammon at senior level?
I think he did, and I think he might have played full forward for a while, short time, you know. He's a player that could play in there, and, you know, he, of course, himself...
He was a great ball winner.
Absolutely, a great fielder of the ball, and a great worker. Himself and Michael Finneran, you know, they soldiered for years in the middle of the field. Michael Finneran from St. Dominic's, right through the noughties, shall we say, as the midfield partnership.
What a player he was as
Michael
well.
Michael was a great servant to Roscommon. You know, he was a great fielder of the ball. He gave everything.
He had serious height as well, though, didn't he?
Michael Finneran deserves great credit. He was a great player for Roscommon. He never didn't give his best for Roscommon. Like he was a great servant for Roscommon. Michael Finneran deserves great credit. And his brother was a great footballer, Colin Finneran. Aidan, I marked him once in a intermediate semi final in 1999. We beat him in the intermediate semi final, Dominic's, the game was up in Ballyleague, 12-8. We beat them, but Colin Finneran was a real handful. Found him very difficult to play against. Very strong. He was very tall. They were playing the ball in high, and I was pretty decent under high ball. I could break it or catch it, you know, but
That's from your goalkeeping.
I often got beaten up a stick. There's no question about it as a fullback in the air. But Colin Finneran, I had a big problem with Colin Finneran. I thought he was a very, very good player. He won a lot of possession that evening, and it was very difficult opponent. So Colin was his brother. But Michael was a great player for Roscommon. Manager now of the Roscommon ladies team. So
well actually with them.
And so like Benny O'Brien, St. Bridget's centre half forward, he had a chance in the first half that was saved by Jeremy Murphy, who was the goalkeeper for Kerry, and he came on to win. He went on to win maybe 3 or 4 All Irelands with Kerry in 04, 06, 07 and 09. Yeah, he won 4 All-Irelands, Jeremy. I went to college with him down at Limerick University. Very nice fella, Jeremy, as well. So Kerry, Roscommon piled on the pressure in the second half, and Benny O'Brien got a point. Rory O'Donoghue got 2 points. They went 3 points ahead at half-time, and they looked the hungrier team. Kerry made 2 changes at the break. Liam Brosnan and Eamon Hennessy came on. Roscommon remained unfazed by the changes. Went further ahead in 33 minutes with a Gary Cox point. Shanahan pulled one back for Kerry. Then Roscommon went 10-7 ahead with Kevin Kane. But then Michael Quirk reduced the lead. John Shanahan then reduced it to 2 points with the point. And then Kieran Scanlon, Brian Scanlon and John Shanahan put Eamon Hennessy through, and he pointed from a difficult angle on 47 minutes. And then, like, it was touch and go, it was level. And then Kerry were inspired at this stage and were unlucky not to score a goal after Roscommon goalie fumbled and Hennessy followed it up, punched the ball towards the net. But Dominic Galooly got back to clear the ball off the line. So credit to Dominic Galooly, Aidan.
Possibly the winning of the game for us at that moment.
And you know another thing? Talk about, you know, goalkeeper is a lonely position. If the goalie makes a mistake, it's generally on his head. But it's great to see where there is something happens that somebody can go back and clear off the line. And that's great play. Dominic Galooly deserved great credit because he saved a goal at that stage. And then Kerry equalised from a free in the 53rd minute and looked like Kerry were going to go on and win the game because they'd come from such, you know, they're 3 or 4 points down. But in the last 5-10 minutes, Roscommon rallied. They finished with a flourish and Karen Mannion won possession and they went ahead on the 55th minute with Karen Mannion's point, only for John Sheehan to give an incredible equaliser. But in Aidan, 11 points apiece, looks like a draw, and in the last 3 or 4 minutes, Roscommon got 3 points in 3 minutes, one from Mannion and two from Rory O'Donoghue. Like, that was brilliant, brilliant performance by Roscommon to beat Kerry in the All-Ireland final in the year 2000. And Rory O'Donoghue, Karen Mannion played blinders, and Dominic Gilooly made that vital interception to save a goal. I think that was the turning point of the game, because if that goal had gone in at that stage, Aidan, with Kerry level or just a point behind, it could have sunk Roscommon. You know,
so changed the game. Yeah.
So fairness to Gay Sheeran, that was his last hurrah as Roscommon manager in 2000, and they won the All Ireland Junior Final on Saturday, the 19th of August 2000, down in Nenagh, and they're the last team from Roscommon to win in All-Ireland, apart from the minor team in 2006. So
that's it. Have you got the Kerry team there, just as so we can compare to and see how many players went on to play for the Kerry seniors as well, just as a point of posterity, if you know what I mean?
Well, I'll give you the Kerry team, but very few of them had. Only Jeremy Murphy and Michael Quirk. But
I'll show you the quality of players that they have. Like, yeah. It's very hard to...
I'll name out the Kerry team. Jeremy Murphy, the goalkeeper from Dingle. Then the Derek McNamara, Michael O'Donoghue and Liam Harty. Neil Sheehy, Kieran Scanlon, Sean O'Mahony, Pádraig Summers, Joe Daly, John Shanahan, Dennis Moynihan, and Liam Murphy, Jack Dennehy, John Quirk, and Brian Scanlon. And then on came Michael Quirk. And there was another, John Shanahan, and Eamon Hennessy, I think, came on as well. Liam Murphy and John Quirk were taken off, and Liam Brosnan and Eamon Hennessy came on. So Michael Quirk and Jeremy Murphy, the only two. And I have a feeling Dennis Moynihan may have played a few league games or that for Kerry as well.
Is he a brother or a cousin or something of Seamus?
I don't know. I don't know that. He may or may not be. But he was there anyway for Kerry at that stage in the year 2000. So there's two great games to look back on with some great satisfaction as a Roscommon supporter. Jack Dennehy was the main threat for Kerry in that junior game. You know, he caused Roscommon a lot of trouble, and John Shanahan scored 7 points. Jack Dennehy scored 3, and Hennessy scored a point. So it was a great achievement for Roscommon to win the Roscommon Junior Championship, the All Ireland Junior Championship. The last time, Aidan, that they won the All-Ireland Junior Championship was in 1940. Roscommon won the All-Ireland in 1940 in junior.
Yeah.
And that was the last time they won it.
Because Roscommon, you know, since they won that year in 2003 or 2000, they haven't really fielded, not many teams actually tend to field a team, you know, a junior team.
Well, I think it's.
I think they did in 1998 because I was on the Gloucestershire team. We got to an All Ireland semi final and we played Dublin, obviously, as you know. And Dublin bet us on that day, and they went on and played Roscommon in the All Ireland junior final that year.
That's right.
A very good, top quality Dublin side, but Roscommon weren't bad that bad. I think that might have been the last time they had a junior team,
Kerry, would you believe this, Aidan? Kerry have won the last 5 All-Ireland Junior Championships. Last year they beat Galway, the year before they beat Galway, the year before that they beat Meath, before that they beat Mayo, and before that they beat Mayo as well. Cavan won it in 14. Kerry won it in 12. Cork beat Roscommon in 2009 in the final, 15 points to 12.
Yeah.
And then Dublin, that beat Gloucester, beat Roscommon by 13 points to 7 in 2008.
I remember that day well.
Roscommon were in the final as well in 2006. And Kerry beat them by 2 points as well. But Roscommon won in the year 2000. The top winners, Kerry have 20, Cork have 17, London have 6, Dublin have 6, Mayo have 5, Meath have 5, Roscommon have 2. And do you know who they beat in 1940?
Kerry.
No, Leinster team, neighbours.
Westmeath.
Aye, Westmeath, yeah. So.
Gee, that's very good. So, yeah.
Do you know something, Aidan? During World War II, Roscommon had an incredible record during World War II. We won an All-Ireland Minor in 1939. We won an All-Ireland Junior in 1940. We won an All-Ireland Minor in 1941. We won All-Ireland Senior in 43 and in 44. So, like, Roscommon...
I think really the only one that's eluding us, really, is the under-21s at this stage, isn't it?
Well, we won in 78 and 66.
Yeah.
And we lost the final in 69.
I think in recent years we've been very unlucky. Like, we've gotten to been thereabouts in final, yeah. But never actually could get over the line.
Yeah, we were in the final in 2012 and 2014, and Dublin beat us on both occasions. And yeah. Before that, we were
very unlucky.
Yeah, well, we gave Dublin in 2014 particularly. We gave Dublin a big lead early on, you know, and then...
I remember that game. That was a very good game of football.
We came back into it, and Jeremy Murta got a couple of goals. Do you remember, like, we sort of came back into it, like, you know, and it was, you know, I think in 2012, I think we might have... That was the time we gave away the two goals early on as well, I think, you know.
Yeah.
And that was a problem for Roscommon, given team starts. Like, in the 2010... under-21 semi-final up in Cavan, and was at the game, and we gave Dublin two goals in the first few minutes, and you're playing catch up after that, and like Neil Collins was playing brilliant that time, and you know we're Carl Shine was midfield, you know we're giving teams starts and then playing catch up. It's very hard to play catch up football, you know, because you're expending throw more and more of your energy and resources to try and chase down the lead. Like Mayo,
and you're using up substitutes as well, and that means then if you know you're using up subs for energy wise to kind of freshen up the team.
Yeah.
But then if a player gets injured, then and you've all your subs used up, that can happen a lot too. You know, where you can't actually bring on someone else. Of course, nowadays they have the blood substitution now as well, I suppose, and it's been increased. But still, it's kind of, you know, in some situations it can be in. It can be an energy-sapping game as well at times.
Yeah. Mayo have a decent record in under-21, Aidan. They have won 5 All-Irelands and they've lost 7. Galway have won 5. Cork have the most. They've won 12. Kerry have won 10. Mayo 5, Galway 5, Tyrone 5, Dublin 5, Roscommon 2, Kildare 2, Derry 2, Donegal 2, Down, Offaly, Antrim, Meath, Armagh, Westmeath have all won 1 apiece. I think it started in 1964. It was. And the first All-Ireland final under 21 in 1964, Kerry beat Laois 110-13. So.
Yeah. So that's very good. So that was another very interesting Roscommon GA memories. And we hope everyone out there, enjoyed the trip down memory lane once again this week. And of course, we look forward to bringing the listeners and Roscommon fans down memory lane again next week. Isn't that right, Ray?
Sure, Aidan. Why not?
That's no problem.
It's always good. It's always nice to go down and reminisce and think about the stars of the past, because they're the people that even the people of today and the players of today can go out and try and emulate and realise that Roscommon have got a proud tradition and that players that represent Roscommon in the past have been tremendously successful, and there's no reason why the players of today can't go out and be equally successful in the future. And that's
it. Of course, as we know, like the Roscommon senior footballers and even minor and under 21 footballers of today for Roscommon, you know, there'll be young kids, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years of age are looking up to those lads. And one day they'll be in the Roscommon setup as well at those grades as well. And it's great to see. And I suppose really that's the way it evolves, like, you know, over generation and generation. I suppose like the game evolves as well as the teams as well, I suppose.
Sure.
The rules kind of change and structures and different things. But I suppose that's the great thing about the GAA. It's always that, you know, the provincial ethos was always there. Like, it was always, you know, if you're in Connacht, you can win the Connacht Championship. You know, it has never went to having it in groups or something like that. And because, I mean, it gives them something to play for, that, you know, oh, you can win Connacht and then you get into an All-Ireland semi-final. There's just something about that, isn't there?
Brilliant, Aidan. To win a trophy is fantastic in any sport at any time. And let's face it, not every Roscommon team will be competing for the All-Ireland every year. You know, it's maybe once in a generation we have a team good enough to challenge for the Sam Maguire. But we have nearly every year a team good enough to challenge for the Connacht Championship and win it. You know, and to win a Connacht Championship is brilliant. And to bring home the Nestor Cup like we did last year is fantastic. And let's hope we can do it this year. And if we can keep winning and being very competitive and winning Connacht Championships, then we can grow as a team, we can learn, we can get more experienced, we challenge ourselves against the better teams all the time, and then we can learn and improve from that. And I think over the last few years, and I made this point a few weeks ago, we are now becoming a seasoned, experienced team. We're no longer a team in transition, we're no longer a young team. We've been in four Connacht finals in a row, in fact five, because we've drawn 16 final. So Roscommon are now an experienced side with a lot of good players who have been, you know, pitted against top teams right through the Super 8s for the last two seasons. We've played Dublin twice, Tyrone twice. We've played Cork, you know, we've been, you know, Donegal as well in the Super 8. So all of those matches and that experience that we have under our belt should stand to us this year and in the years ahead to say to ourselves, hey, we've learned. We can grow and develop and get better and better. And why can't we go up and challenge further? I believe there's more in this Roscommon team. I think we can do it. And if we can believe in ourselves and realise the people we're playing against, they're not supermen. They're flesh and blood. They've no rights over us. We have got to know them now over the last few seasons. And there's no reason why we can't get closer and closer and closer to them this season and next season and in the seasons ahead. So I'll leave it at that point.
It's really, you know, when you're ahead, when you're ahead, it's about putting teams away and not be, really put them out of sight as early as you can. And then, you know, that sets a good precedent then for the next game because, you know, it creates good momentum as well.
Aidan, the team that I always look to as an example is Brian Cody's Kilkenny when they were at their prime. Yeah. If they even got the sniff of a goal chance, it was a goal. There's no thing about take your point, you might get a goal chance later on. Once you're within the 21-yard line and you're in a one-on-one situation, if you can get inside your man, you must go for a goal. This idea of taking a handy point and say, grand, you need to, the top teams have to be able to show that level of conviction and, you know, ability to take goal chances when they arise. And that's one thing we did, like in that final against Galway in 2017, we got two great goal chances and we scored them. And goals win games and we have to have forwards that can
give you a cushion.
Yeah, and Aidan, the Roscommon team of the 70s and 80s, early 80s, Tony McManus, Michael Finner and Jigger O'Connor, they were a goal scoring team. They were not afraid of putting the ball in the back of the net. And it's something like, you know, I'm not a coach at that level, but the more you put the ball in the back of the net at training, the more you're practicing it, like it should be. I've been a keeper for many, many years, and you've been as well. And I can say that there's been times I was in goals and fellas put the ball over the bar, and I'm saying to myself, why did he put the ball over the bar? He's 21 yards out, one-on-one, and he took this handy point. Like, and it takes a lot of guts and conviction to go for a goal. But I think that the top teams, when Brian Cody's team, for example, the Kerry team, the Dublin team, when they get in for an opportunity for a goal, there's no question of the ball ending up any other place than in the back of the net. They don't take a handy point. They don't tip it over. They don't hand pass it over. They put it in the back of the net. And that's what the top teams need to do. And that's what the top teams are doing. So you look at your chances that you create during a match and you see how many did we take. And simple arithmetic after that. You have to treat, compare like with like. If you're in a game where you have the matching of the opposition and you have the opportunities, you know, it's all about the belief in yourself to go and win the game and take those scores. So let's hope, I wish Roscommon this year we can go further and, you know, play to the maximum, take all those chances and believe and hopefully advance on last season then.
That's it, because I mean, just touching back on that point, I mean, you look at, you know, Dublin when they were under Jim Gavin. No matter how much Dublin would win a game by, and you know, like last year, the year before, and all that, you know, during their five in a row, their average winning score was about between 15 and 20 points in the Leinster Championship, and they say this, that, and the other. But no matter how well they played, and how whatever the margin of victory. You always saw Jim Gavin, oh yeah, well, we did play well, but we need to improve. There was always something to improve on. And I think that's what made them, the bar was always being raised in the Dublin panel, because if you weren't performing, you didn't, in some cases, you wouldn't even make the match, the subs bench, never mind the starting 15. But then again, they have a squad that can do that. But you know, the demand was there. Like, you know, if you, it was always increasing. You know, the bar was always being heightened.
Well, I think Jim Gavin, like the great coaches like Alex Ferguson, what's the greatest threat to a successful team? And complacency. Alex Ferguson always warned against complacency, and Jim Gavin was always weary of complacency as well. So he never said that his team would have finished Artigue. He always looked at ways that he could improve on them. And it is quite easy for a team to get complacent, where they put in a good performance and everybody celebrates it, and they start believing their own publicity then, and it can affect a team psychologically, where they start believing their own hype. And what happens then is they lose focus, and then once focus is lost, concentration is lost, and then pressure gets on them in games, and they're not able to replicate. So Jim Gavin was very, very good, Aidan, at, if you like, quenching any complacency that crept into his team. So he would always sort of look at ways that they could improve, and probably tell the players as well what they didn't do right in the game as opposed to what they did right, because he would have expected them to do the things right that they did do right. So it's a very good psychological ploy from Jim Gavin. Great manager, signs on it. He's won five in a row. He keep them steady, keep them grounded, and not to get carried away. Because, like, let's face it, when you're a successful team and the fans are happy and you're happy and you're playing very well, it's easy to get carried away and lose focus. So I think that's what he was doing.
Even with the players, when they're interviewed after games, Clearing, Kilkenny, Michael Dara McCall, any of the players in the Dublin squad, when they're interviewed after the game, they're always all about, oh yeah, well, we need to improve on this, that, and other for next day as well. So I think that the way Jim Gavin was, it spilled over onto the team, and even with the players never got carried away. And let's say, when you just said there, like, when you look at the sort of all that Dublin have achieved, you know, the five in a row and the great players that they have, they never lose focus, and they never get cocky or anything. They're always very, you know.
Well, Aidan, if you look at it, you could have a team and you get a good result, and if you're the coach, and you decide to bring the team out to celebrate all night and a party, it's easy to get carried away, and you know, you lose focus. And Jim Gavin, Mick O'Dwyer, Brian Cody, all those top managers, they keep their teams on the ground. They celebrate whenever the thing is done, the job is done, when their mission is accomplished. Like, Jim Gavin was in the Navy or the Air Corps, so he would have been well aware that the mission for him when he started out every year was to win the All-Ireland. That was the goal or the mission of the operation. And the mission was accomplished when Sam Maguire was in the back of
things never got crowded.
No. So like it's like a military operation. Like, they don't celebrate until the mission accomplished. You know, because you're right, you can mark milestones along the route, but not getting carried away. And I think Dublin never seemed to get carried away with anything they achieved, and signs on it, they stayed at the top for so long. So it's psychologically very good for a manager to be able to keep his team grounded and to ensure that complacency doesn't set in. And Manchester United did that very, very well with Alex Ferguson. They never got carried away. Or if anyone did get carried away, that was the end of their United career. So it's a big threat to a successful team, complacency, celebrating too much before the mission is achieved. And you know, it's they're all there. Like, if you look at it, the Dublin team and what they say after games and Jim Gavin, they're not hiding anything. Neither was Brian Cody. They just said it as it was. Like, and they were teaching other coaches how to, you know, how to sort of deal with good results. You know, and it's an important thing to be able to deal with a good result, to ensure that the team doesn't get so carried away with themselves and celebrate so much that they forget that there's more to play, there's more games ahead, and they're unable then to replicate that because they've sort of felt they've done enough in the season. You know, we've done enough now.
Could see that in Brian Cody. You were saying, like, you know, you looked at Kilkenny. You know, remember the calculated risk? Well, it wasn't really a risk either. The calculated decision he made. Remember, DJ Carey had retired. And then, like, he came back then. Like, he was called back into the panel or whatever, you know, because he said, gee, you need to come back, we need you. You know, they got to the All-Ireland final and, or the All-Ireland semi-final and they needed him. And he came back. Now, that could have went one or two ways. And I saw the DJ Carey documentary. You know, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. And, you know, that could have been a great decision or it could have been a monumental mistake. But as far as Cody was concerned, there was never an issue with bringing him back.
Yeah.
And, of course, as it turned out, when he was really needed, the first free, which is always take a freeze himself. It's always the pressure one in a big game. And he would say, like, everyone was worried, well, will he put it over the bar? It was as if he was never away. So, you know, and went on to win the All-Ireland that year. So it just goes to show you that's the shrewdness of Cody as well. And I think that's a good thing to have. So, listen, sure, thanks very much for that, Ray. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, Aidan. Bye-bye.
That's great. And that was Ray Lannan, the former Scammon goalkeeper.